The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Hey, this is Sarah Lee Langford, and we're in Roebuck, Alabama. I'm here with Alan Aldridge. I'm going to play you a song off my record. It's called Two-Hearted Rounder.
Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me today.
My pleasure.
I wanted to start off just talking a little bit about your record, Two Hearted Rounder. Thank you for sharing the title track.
Yeah.
For the opener. A little bit about that album. When did you drop it?
Let's see. It's been almost a year. So okay. It was November of 2019.
Okay. And yeah. Then lo and behold, here come a pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, we got to do a show at Mom's basement and a little thing at Seasick to sort of debut it. And then Will Stewart, who plays on the record, and I got to go play two shows, one in Chattanooga and one in Knoxville, and then the world shut down. So yeah. It's hard to sell a record when you're sitting at home and not playing and promoting it. But
so the way I found you and your music, it was through Katie and Adrian. I had them on the podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just asked them, I was like, give me some plugs. And that was one of the first records that came out.
Sweet.
And, you know, so immediately I'll check it out on the way home.
Yeah.
And great record.
Well, I mean, there's so many great musicians in Birmingham. Uh-huh. And everyone is really kind and supports one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky to have the musicians that I got to play with on this record.
So you mentioned Will. Who else helped?
Yeah. Ford Boswell plays pedal steel. So what's not to like about that?
Yeah.
Keelan Parrish plays a bass. He was in Vulture Whale.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brian Gosden plays drums. He's from the Dexateens. And, you know, multiple other bands. But I'm like, I've got somehow wrangled this all-star cast of musicians to play with me. And then we recorded it at Ol Elegante with Lester. And then Cornelius Chapel put it out. So thanks to Wes and all the other guys, too.
Yeah.
It's really, I've been playing music for my whole life.
Okay.
But this is the first time that it really feels like a finished product, you know, coming out into the world. So I'm really proud of it, and I'm looking to get in this studio back again soon.
Okay.
If I can afford it.
Yeah.
It's like I haven't sold the first record yet, but, you know, sometimes you've got to record the songs while they're still fresh. You know, I don't want to sit on it for too long and then it feels a little stale.
Yeah, I've mentioned to you as far as money goes, I've been trying to save up so I could get somewhere to record, and
uh-huh.
It's turned into just doing it in the bedroom.
Yeah.
But, and I'm afraid that it's going to, you know, like you said, that it's going to be like, it's going to feel like an unfinished project, you know?
Well, there's nothing wrong with
but
that.
But at least it'll be bare bones and it'll be out, and, you know, it'll, however I decide to circulate it, you know,
yeah.
We'll be able to enjoy it like that.
Well, until can't wait to hear it.
Until we can do better, right?
Yeah.
So I get that, wanting to do it while it's fresh, you know?
Yeah, and actually this is the first time I've ever played with a band that's plugged in. I always played acoustic music before, mm-hmm. folk music, that kind of stuff. I was raised playing bluegrass.
Oh, okay.
So my folks play, my brother plays, and I used to play the bass, the upright bass in that bluegrass band with my family. Hokey little, it was great, you know. But before I could even reach the top of the bass, they had me standing on the fireplace hearth,
uh-huh.
you know, so I could reach the top of it. So I've been playing forever, and I, you know, I've sung all kinds of music. I used to sing in a jazz band. I'm like, what? Nobody wants to hear me sing jazz. And I have a music ed degree, so I learned how to sing opera and all that stuff, too. So I do all kinds of things, but this is when I finally feel like I've found the band and the sound that I've been looking for.
Awesome. Let's talk about growing up, and you mentioned just being raised in music. So where are you originally from, and just a little bit about the family? Was it like a folky Christian kind of background, or what?
Well, let's see. I'm from Tuscaloosa, and my mom and dad both taught me how to play, and like I said, I played the bass and started playing the guitar when I was about 13.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little family band, and we'd play you know, gospel songs or just, you know, traditional bluegrass music,
mm-hmm.
and we would go play at bluegrass festivals around the South, playing at Horse Pens and playing at, you know, Foggy Hollow bluegrass and all those, you know, Briarfield, all the things that were those things coming up. But I think I reached a point when I was about like 15 or 16, I was like, oh, this isn't cool anymore. And, you know, I think like every kid, you kind of rebel a little bit against what your parents like. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I figured out that Jerry Garcia liked bluegrass. So then I was like, oh, okay, it's fine.
Was he a big influence?
Well, I mean, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it's no secret I'm a deadhead. But, yeah, lots of influences. Emmylou Harris, who's from around here, and Gillian Welch and stuff like that has always been kind of core to songwriting and vocal style.
So was it about 16 when you walked away from the family band to start pursuing your own?
Well, yeah, I still played with them for a while. And then when I got into college, I played in a cover band with some friends of mine. We were called the Elbow Benders. Nice. And then I moved to Colorado for a little while and played in another bluegrass band with some friends, and it was called Acoustic Ranch Party. So, like, you just, it's coming from all places, yeah. Alan. So it's kind of all over the place. But moved back to Alabama and had two daughters and was kind of doing the mom thing for a while. And I have another CD that I put out before this under my married name, and it's called Junkyard Heart. So I don't really talk about it much because that person who wrote those songs and everything kind of feels like a different person than who I feel like right now. But yeah, it was all acoustic, and my brother played on it and some other friends. And then I kind of, you know, did that. And then thought, well, let's plug this thing in and see what it sounds like. I bought an electric guitar for the first time in my life last year. I've been playing since I was 13, never had an electric guitar.
Right.
Until I was 38 years old.
What kind did you get?
I got a 1972 Gibson ES-175.
Okay, cool. I didn't know if it would have been like a Telecaster for the...
No, I pretty much count on Will to be my Telecaster man. And Ford plays guitar too and mandolin, so he's really versatile to play with. He's an amazing guitarist as well as the pedal steel.
Yeah.
So
I'm always blown away by him on the pedals.
And I mean, what a nice guy too.
Mm-hmm.
I love my band. Like, these guys are my heart.
Yeah. That's just one thing. I've only briefly and hung out with Ford twice the night at the show with Will Stewart and Taylor Hollingsworth, and before that was hanging out. You know, he plays with Early James as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's one thing that we were all kind of, as he was playing with Will Stewart that night, it was like, man, he is just killing it.
Yeah, he can do everything.
Yeah. And seems like, I don't know, because he's always saying, I want to be better. I'm not at the level I want to be. I was like, you're at a pretty good level, man.
Well, that's admirable, though, you know, yeah. To just want to strive to get better. Yeah. I miss playing. I'm really looking forward to making things right again.
Yeah. Yeah, so what are the pre-COVID, what did playing out look like? Would you stay pretty busy on the road?
Not really. I mean, being a mom, you know, I'm kind of bound to that gladly, but yeah, we'd play at the Nick or at Mom's or places around town like that. Okay. I was poised to do lots more this year because, like I said, I mean, the record had just come out in November, and I'm sort of trying to make some plans for touring this summer, but you know, we'll just hit the pause button and pick it back up hopefully next year.
Yeah, it was a you know, it was a heartbreak all the way around. You know, albums that came out late 2019, and then people who had recorded albums who planned to drop them in the spring and even the summer. It's like, do I release it or no? You know,
yeah,
I can't play it.
It's hard to know what to do sometimes because you've put everything into the record, including finances, but you know, all of yourself into it too. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hopefully people feel satisfied with whatever choice they made this year, because it was tough either way, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just either way, just, you know, as a music fan, I'm glad they're releasing it. I know it has to suck
Yeah.
that they can't play it, but at at least I get to hear it some way. Uh-huh. You know, same attitude toward those, you know, live streams got popular there for a while.
And yep.
Then it felt like everybody was doing a live stream, and it was just a big old pond that you couldn't even swim through anymore.
That's true. Yeah, and it's strange. I did 2 live streams in the summer, and I really enjoyed them, doing mm-hmm. them, but it's a bizarre experience to play to a computer screen, and the only feedback that you're getting is the little ticker that rolls up the side of the computer where somebody's, you know, giving you an emoji or, like, requesting a song,
yeah.
And then you're having to squint at the little type and think, oh, no, I can't play that song right now. I didn't practice that one, or, you know, it's just way different than... Well, maybe it's not all that different, because sometimes you play a gig and the people are just sitting around looking at their phones or talking over you the whole time.
Yeah.
But at least you can get some kind of feedback with people when you play live.
Yeah. You know? Just a little bit more about your story. You mentioned college. Where'd you attend?
I went to the University of Montevallo.
Okay. There's your music.
Yeah, because I was from Tuscaloosa and... raised in a music family, you know, I really just wasn't latched on to the idea of being at a big football school. And I was like, I gotta go to somewhere else. I gotta get out of here. And then I met a lot of people in Montevallo who are in the music scene now, still. I mean, just lots of people. Jim Fay, Janet Simpson Templin is, we used to sing in the choir together.
Wow.
Singing Brahms and everything. Now we sang, let's see, we did a thing, I guess it's been about 2 years now. We were asked to come to the Alice Stevens Center and give a talk before the Roseanne Cash concert about women in country music. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you and me, Janet, here we go again. And
doing it.
We sing together sometimes. We've been talking about putting a show together with probably with Janet's band and
it's Timber,
me.
Right?
Well, Timber is Janet and Will, and then Janet plays under her own name.
Okay.
And so does Will, but they have the same band. And so Janet, you know, when it's her name, it's the song she's written. When it's Will, it's the songs he's written. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're pretty versatile.
Yeah. It's that family thing about Birmingham, right?
Yeah.
Everybody shares everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, just at Montevallo, I'm assuming, I went to University of Mobile for a time, and I was in the music program for a year before I walked away from it, but primary instrument. I remember, you know, you had to pick your primary instrument for music, and I had been playing guitar for, I think, 12 years at the time. I got home and was telling my roommate, I was like, I had to finally pick my primary instrument. He's like, how was that hard? To pick guitar. And I was like, I went with voice. And he was like, why? I was like, I want to sing better.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not worried about classically training myself on guitar. I would like to learn, like, some different styles and ways to use my voice. That would be helpful.
Yeah.
So I guess Montevallo, you had to do that as well.
Yeah. Voice was my primary instrument. And my second instrument was piano. And I fumbled my way through that big time. I am not a great pianist, but, you know, I'm functional. I know what's what, but don't ask me to play the piano.
Yeah. I think everybody that's ever taken sight singing, they'll all agree that it's just the greatest thing ever. But that was the reason why I had to learn how to play piano just a little bit so I could, okay, that's what.
Yep.
That's where I got to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came down to sightseeing, couldn't do it. Couldn't hit it. Couldn't find it.
Yeah.
The good old days.
It's been a minute since all that anyway. It feels like another lifetime ago.
So what about Colorado? You mentioned that. What led you out there?
Well, my husband at the time was going to grad school out there. So we went together and... went to breweries and played in the mountains and...
Yeah, I haven't been. I heard a lot about that scene, like, as far as, like, folk music. That seems to be the core of Colorado, I guess, what they're into.
I mean, they really like bluegrass out there. They do. I mean, that's where all that kind of mountain jam grass is based out of? I see your face. You're like, yeah.
I'm just imagining this going back to the band name that you had. I was like, folk jam band. You said you was a deadhead. And I was like, I'm just picturing like a bluegrass folk jam band. Am I close?
Yeah, close. I mean, we play at festivals and, man, wedding gigs pay good. And then you end up singing all kinds of weird requested songs for their first dance. I'm like, they want what? Okay, you got to learn something really bizarre to sing at a wedding. But, yeah.
What were some of the requests? Do you remember now?
Well, the one I thought was really pretty good was, it was the Del McCurry band, The Same Kind of Crazy as Me. I don't know if you know that one.
I don't.
It's a pretty good first dance song for a bunch of rednecks.
We had I think the weirdest request that we ever had, when I was in Mobile, we had a band forever, almost the entirety of me living down there. Buddy of mine got married. His wife wanted to walk out to New American Classic by Taking Back Sunday. That is a long-distance relationship breakup song.
Yeah, sometimes people just don't think about it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but they just wanted the instrumental. It's like, I like the music. It's pretty. And I was like, okay, fair. As long as we can say that is not, you know, that's not a good song choice for, like, I guess, you know, lyric reasons.
Yeah, and I had a friend of mine, she asked me, she bought a copy of this record to give to her niece that was getting married. And she bought it, and she was like, you know what? I'm going to save this for a Christmas present because this is a breakup record. I don't think I should give this to her for her wedding gift. Maybe we'll save that one for another time.
Yeah. Different celebration, different holiday.
Yeah. Divorce is a reason to celebrate. I mean, you could just, you know, somebody's getting divorced, be like, here, I have just the thing.
Yeah, here. Been saving
this
for you.
Let's celebrate.
Yeah. So a lot of the lyrical content and the work of this album came from that?
Well, without being too obvious, yeah, I mean, whenever things happen in my life, I definitely process them through song.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that not everything on the record is autobiographical, so you'll just have to guess.
Yeah, which I think is better. You know, if you're not told, then you gotta leave it up to interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Let's go back just you know, to buying that electric guitar,
uh-huh.
And before. As and just getting to the sound of Two Hearted Rounder is, did you find electric guitar to be way different when you were getting into it?
Well, it's not terribly different, but I mean, because I've played acoustic all my life, I kind of have a, I don't know a lot about gear, you know? So, I mean, you know, pedals and amps and how you should, you know, tune it. And which direction do you really want to place it? And where do you want to stand in relation to, you know, like all those things they're still pretty fresh to me. And when I first started playing with the band like this, I was actually borrowing Keelan's guitar. So it was an old Gibson II that was his granddad's. So I played it for a while just so I could kind of sit on what I might actually like to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have many guitars. I have four plus a beater that you can take camping and not have to worry about it. But I like to have a nice guitar when mm-hmm. I have it. So I'm selective about it. And I still, you know, there's lots of guitars out there. And they're all calling my name. But
yeah.
I like to, let's see, the one I played just now is a 1930 Kalamazoo, and I got that from Bob Tedrow over there in Homewood.
And I had never heard of that brand.
Yeah, well, it's an Epiphone, like, that was made in Kalamazoo.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't know that much about it, but yeah. And then this guitar hanging on the wall here is 1935 Gibson that was my granddad's. And then my dad gave me the Martin in 2000. It's a D18. And then I have that 72 Gibson, the electric. So, yeah. Four really great guitars. And I'm always just hoping to do them justice. Because, you know, I really consider myself more of a vocalist than a guitarist. But I think I, you know, can try and hold my own a little bit with backing myself up.
Yeah, that's... My first one was a Gibson SG, and that was real good. I had just graduated high school, and it was perfect for that time because I was really into punk rock, playing fast, and just nasty distortion and all that. And then the older I got, like, luckily a good friend of mine bought the thing, so I still get to play it. But I'm not interested in owning that guitar anymore because it's just too much for me. And then, like, going back to, like, gear and pedals and all that, and just... as I get to know Will, and just as I'm getting more immersed into the electric guitar scene, just getting the ear, I was like, that was a Telecaster. Mm-hmm. It's like being able to pick up those differences. I ended up buying a Telecaster accidentally because it had the sound that I wanted, but I wasn't even real sure what that sound was at the time. Mm-hmm. It was that, you know, that kind of twang.
Oh, yeah.
And all that. And then... you can put some fuzz pedals on it, and you can kind of make it a little nasty too if you want to. You gotta know which ones to get though. And once again, that's fresh to me because I never cared anything about all the gear. I had like a PV, tube amp. Just I couldn't even remember what kind it was now. I sold it, and I had that SG forever. I didn't run a lot of pedals. I'm maybe an overdrive, but other than that, I would just tune it up red hot on the tubes and just. Belt it. Wasn't really into gear. Then it's, you know, you get on YouTube and you can get lost on that, trying to figure out what's the perfect guitar and what's the perfect amp and your pedal board and what you want, the sound you're going for. You can get lost in that.
Yeah. I count on my guys a little bit sometimes about making sure that I know what I'm doing. And I'm okay with that, you know. I figure you can't be good at everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why you got to surround yourself with people, right? So what about with that Gibson that you have now? Is there any pedals that you run through it?
No.
Just clean?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but it's a little bit like just still new territory.
Just getting into it?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, anything else to add or subtract or anywhere else you'd like to go?
No, I can't think of anything.
Well, cool. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time. Oh, social medias, if you want to plug.
Oh, yeah.
And ways to find your record. And...
sure, yeah, thanks for that. I'm on Instagram. You can search Sarah Lee Langford. It's got some dots in there. Records on Cornelius Chapel. .com, and I think you can still get one from Seasick Records. Yeah, we're on Spotify. Not that we'll ever see a dime from that, but you know, you could listen to it and then see if you like it and then buy it, you know?
And that's the biggest thing is, especially during COVID, is one thing I've been really encouraging people is like, if you have a record, especially if they're not on a huge label, buy that record. Because they're not playing.
Yeah.
And they just put a lot of money into this record.
Sure did.
And they got to get it back.
Yep. Well, we'll see if I ever get the money back from this one, you know. It's like the money that you put in, you know, it's not always about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely making the record was not about money ever.
Yeah, it's about
Never.
The record.
Yeah, it's about the record. But, you know, you have to use your common sense, too, on what's a good sound decision for your life and where to put your limited funds.
Yeah.
So I don't regret the fact that I haven't made my money back or anything, but you know, eventually I still have a pile of records sitting around, you know, next time I'm actually able to play some shows, then we'll lug them around, see if anybody wants one.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This song is called Big Women.
Mm-hmm. Like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.